Welcome to the Ralph Moore Podcast. Gain a leadership advantage as Ralph pulls wisdom from his bag of over 50 years' experience in planting and leading multiplying churches. Our goal is to help you live as a leader you'd want to follow. You'll learn about making disciples and planting churches, but beyond that, you'll gain practical wisdom about subjects like how to manage your team, handling difficult people, pulling a congregation off a growth plateau, and even money management.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is part two of my interview with my really great friend, Ryan Delameter. I'm blown away by the things that God is doing through this very small, very underfunded, a very expansive movement. It's an exciting thing. I hope you enjoy it.
The first person was Adam Watts. I mean, it was Adam's a very interesting human being. Adam owns a jiu-jitsu studio in town that he's had for 20 years. He's this very interesting blend of, he's very funny and very disarming guy. And, he's a top tier jiu-jitsu practitioner. That's no hyperbole. This guy's a world-class world champion inside of a sport that continues to grow in the U.S. And I want to underline that, because a lot of times people are good at sports, but they're not growing still. You know, jiu-jitsu is just, the growth trajectory for jiu-jitsu is like this. I mean, you can see the amount of academies that were in the U.S. 30 years ago. There were a couple, then 20 years ago, then 10. And he's enormously respected. I knew none of this when I met Adam. I knew Adam because his wife was bringing their son Kingston to my youth group when I was at Saddleback. But Adam never came to church. Julie would come to church. And Julie said, "Would you have lunch with my husband? I think he'll like you." I said, "Okay." And so I had lunch with Adam in downtown San Clemente. I didn't meet him at church. I met him kind of because his wife told me, like, "Hey, will you, you know?" And we hit it off. And when I went to lunch with them, I had written this little book about my bike ride, and I gave it to him. And he read that book, and then he called me when he was done reading it and asked me if I wanted to go surfing. I said, sure. Well, when I went surfing with him the first time, this guy's an exceptional surfer. And we just started having a Bible study. It was basically me and Adam. And that's kind of how it started. And God used, you know, put yourself in my shoes. I'm terrified to be starting this. And God very clearly put Adam in my path. And we started reading the Bible, and we started having Bible study at his jiu-jitsu studio. And he would, this sounds crazy, and it is crazy, but he would stand up, like he would say, "Hey, come, do you want to do the jiu-jitsu workout?" I don't want to do the jiu-jitsu workout. I'm going to die. He's recruited me like so many times to try to get into jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, I don't, that's not me, dude. I just want to surf. I don't want to do all this kung fu and karate. That's you, man. Like, you know, I'm good. But I would show up at the end of his workout, because we basically had Bible study after a 2-hour, and I'd show up to his gym, and there's 40 alpha dogs in there with their outfits on. And he would stand up and say, "This is Pastor Ryan. If anybody wants to stay for church." And then he would say wild things like, "If you don't come, I'm going to kick your ass," like crazy stuff. Like well, that's not exactly how we invited people to Saddleback, but it's really funny. You know, telling those stories now, but, sure. And that's kind of how we started. And basically we did that for, about 4 months. And then I had already been going to El Salvador on surf trips and different water project stuff. And Adam and I went together, I don't know, with about 10 other guys. And we did a water project at our friend Simpapo's house. And then Simpapo started a church. So basically the first year of that I started in 2019, we had a Bible study at Adam's jiu-jitsu studio. And then we went to El Salvador twice. The first time we sort of scoped out how we were going to do this water project at Simpapo's house. Simpapo then started a church at his house, which is great. So that was like our first kind of church plant.
Yeah.
And then we installed our water system there as a way to serve the locals in the community.
So we're not talking about 10,000 people getting water. It's a small community. You patch together the hardware to make it happen. What yes. I think I was told is it was in a shipping container with solar panels on the roof. And, you know, tell us a little bit about it. I think well, that's in this innovative, inventive, I can take this and this and put it together and make something out of it. We've lost that. You know, I grew up as a kid thinking my dad could do anything. My dad was a machinist. I remember him building some cabinets in our garage, and we didn't have a lot of money. And it's like, oh my gosh, he's a carpenter too. You know, it's like, and then I was always outside with the vise and the tools. And, you know, he let me do all these things, taught me to do all these things. And this is still, we're still coming out of, you know, I was born in 1945, the end of World War II. So America's not yet a rich country the way that it's rich now because the war depleted so much. So people are still putting things together and repairing things. And, you know, you'd always hear the thing, oh, that guy can do anything with baling wire. He can repair anything. Baling wire, by the way, is what they used to wrap around hay bales. And you could fix things with it. But we've come a long ways. A whole generation of people don't know anything about that kind of creativity. And you guys did that. And I think it needs to be displayed a little bit because there are guys that are restricted. They're starting churches. They don't have some stuff that they need, but they could put it together. And, you know, when we started out in Manhattan Beach, what became Hope Hermosa, we didn't have a sound system. So somebody gave us a reel-to-reel tape recorder, which we never used the tape part, but it had a microphone, and we put it underneath underneath a box, and we used it as an amplifier, and it had two speakers, and we hung the speakers on the wall, this crappy, cheap old thing, but it served us for about a year and a half. It worked. We made something out of nothing. Talk to us about that.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the Genesis 1:2, I think Tohu Avohu, God created something out of nothing. And I think there's a principle there about, you know, scarcity is the mother of invention. I mean, if you don't have assets, you know, if you don't have monetary assets, then you then have the assets of the creativity of the people that you have a relationship with. Those are your assets.
That's right.
So then you have to ask, you know, you have to ask your friends, what can we do? And what I find funny, so I found this system that converted salt water into clean water. Okay. Their desal system has been around a long time, more in the boating industry, because you have to use desal systems on boats or else you won't have any water.
Right.
And so it's nothing new, but we took the technology from the boating industry, and then we knew that we didn't want to create more costs for the people on the receiving end. So we powered it from solar panels. So we put the two together. Basically, we took, a desal system. We powered it with solar panels, and that was our project. And it worked for about a year. We've since switched platforms. We're using another platform now because anytime, just like with a sound system, you're going to find a better one, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's always like, yeah, there's iterations, you know, or software updates. Like I call it 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. Sure. But and we did that. Now, in fact, I remember because we had somebody make a video of it. And I took that video and I put it on our website. And I got an email Email read, president of the MIT Water Club. And you know how you get spam emails?
Yeah.
Just delete them?
Yeah.
I just deleted it. I thought it was a joke. I thought no one from MIT would be emailing me. I haven't gone there. And I went to Fullerton Junior College. My dad's a forklift driver. No one from MIT is, for those of you who don't know what MIT is, it's essentially the most prestigious technical institution on earth.
Yeah.
And basically what happened was they have an annual water summit, and they invite practitioners and policy people to a water summit. And they ask them to share case studies and et cetera. Well, someone in there, a grad student in their engineering department, somehow saw that video. And then the president emailed me a second time. And I remember this because I called you.
Yeah, I remember.
I said, Ralph, remember this call?
Yeah, I
called
did.
You. I said, who am I going to call? I said, who am I going to call? I said, well, I'm going to call Ralph. And I called you. And I said, you'll never guess what happened today. And I got to be a part of this this water summit, and they knew that I was a pastor doing a project in El Salvador, and they loved it. It was great. But that was another one of those things where I felt like God was telling me, you know,
so you,
I'm with you.
You were a presenter in that water summit, right?
Correct. Yeah, a presenter of our case study. There were. I was not a keynote speaker. Those are
sure.
I presented my case study. Yes, people asked me questions. It was awesome. Yeah. So that was basically the first year. The first year we, you know, it was very much about. I mean, I'm still best friends with Adam, but that was kind of year one. I kind of wanted to break it up, like I'm starting year seven. Actually, I've completed 6 years now, and This is one of the reasons I was excited to talk today, because I kind of can get in the weeds when I communicate. I don't do really well. I'm not like a slick presenter, but I do better when I have a longer time to explain myself.
Yeah.
And I was excited to talk to you today about this one, because I knew we finally had time. But if I'm really, you know, straightforward, this is the first time I've actually been sort of excited to talk about this, because I've always viewed ocean water as a case study, something that I wanted to spend time on and make better and learn from. And so I feel like after 6 years, like, you know, I can kind of talk like and how things I made. Adam was the first person that it was really clear, you know, God's, you know, put him in my path. Now in year two, My friend Mark, who I had lived with in San Diego, was a youth pastor. He had gotten out of large church ministry, and he started a coffee shop in Ocean Beach. And that coffee shop was called OB Beans. It's still going. And he did really well. And I had joked with him, you need to come to San Clemente. And it started as a joke. And then I said, all right, I'm going to find you a location. And that's the location they have now in El Camino Real.
Yeah.
My friend from high school, Joe Bard, owns Bonsai Bowls, and Joe had opened up a pokey store in the spot where this is now, and it didn't work out. And I called Joe, and he was looking to lease it, and that got some traction. And then I called Mark, and I said, I know who should be your business partner. It should be Adam Watts. And him and Adam have just done amazing.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of how Sir Coffee got started. Sir Coffee got started by basically my little brother and one of my best friends, because Mark I've known almost, well, 26 years now. And so that's how. And so I'm not one of the owners. I'm not one of the investors. I get asked that all the time, because what they did, because they're kind of, we're all very loyal to each other. When they opened up the shop, they gave me a key to it. They said, you can use this anytime you want. And they printed up my high school photo, and they put it in the back for their staff to see. And they told them, this guy's never to pay for anything as long as he's alive. And so, again, God was showing me, I'm for you. I got you. Here's your church. You know, here's. And so for 6 years, because of our loyalty to each other, you know, people say, oh, you're so nice. You get me coffee. And I always have to point out, I didn't buy you coffee. My friends bought you your coffee. But when you see them, tell them, thank you. Yeah. But that was an important thing, because that's really become our kind of our home in a way. Because what happened was Adam, I said, Adam, we need to go over to the coffee shop and let's move our Bible study over there. So we did, and we did it for a while, and I could see Adam sitting farther and farther back in our meeting time. We used to sit up front together. And I finally went out to lunch and I go, how you doing? He goes, I miss being at the jiu-jitsu studio. I said, well, why don't you go back there and do what we were doing at the beginning? He goes, I think that's a good idea. And so he does Grapple Chapel now.
That's so good.
Yeah. So, you know, Adam owns the coffee shop with Mark, but Adam knows he needs to be, you know, at the Grapple Chapel. Yeah. That's kind of year two, you know? And what I find interesting about that is there have been three people that have come to Grapple Chapel with Adam, and then they went other places and started Grapple Chapel. I'm trying to kind of dissect this a little bit so it'll make sense to people a little bit better. The first guy was Dr. Ryan Barang, who was a chaplain on Camp Pendleton. And Camp Pendleton is a few miles from Sir Coffee and also a few miles from Bite Strong. So a lot of the guys from On Base, they go to the coffee shop and they also go to the jiu-jitsu studio, and they want to train with Adam because he's a three-stripe black belt and he's a humble guy, and they want to come train with him. Well, Dr. Ryan Barang was coming to Grapple Chapel, but he then got stationed in Germany in Stuttgart. Mm-hmm. So when he went to Stuttgart, Germany, he started Grapple Chapel in Germany.
Wow.
And so he just took the same template. So he went there. Then kind of fast forward a little bit later on, I would meet Curtis, and Curtis, of course, is now a missionary in Sweden. But Curtis told one of his friends in Sweden, who's super good at jiu-jitsu, hey, here's a way to do this. And he started Grapple Chapel in Sweden.
Wow.
So we didn't directly disciple him, but he liked that idea enough that he ran with it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great, you know, especially for young people. I mean, anytime you have somebody who's younger and is imitating what you do, that's a massive compliment.
So just, I want to interject something here. That's very biblical. I've known Jesus for, I'm 79, so I've known Jesus for 74 years, and I've been a graduate of two theological institutions. And about 3 months ago, I finally discovered that Paul never went to Colossae. When he wrote the book of Colossians, he's writing to a guy who probably started the church there, was from there, and then started the church in Laodicea and another city, and never got there himself. And so it's somebody who may have been influenced by him in Ephesus when he was there, may not. We don't know. All we know is it happened. And, I'm dumbfounded that it took me all that time to figure out that it wasn't Paul running around doing it. But this idea of the Holy Spirit takes a seed of a thought and something blows up. The reason that we ever started any churches is because of something that happened in the Philippines when I was in a Bible college and very frustrated with inactivity that was going on around me. Didn't see much of anything happening. I read about this guy and it's like, oh, there's a whole other way of thinking about this. And it, you know, it eventually bore fruit. And he and I, the guy that I read about, he became a mentor to me eventually. But at the time I read about him, I'd never even heard of him. So interesting how the Lord works. But go on with the story. I keep interrupting.
Yeah. So that's, and so basically Grapple Chapel has spread a little bit like that. Well, like that. Adam continues to do it, and that God's using it. And then, yeah, like another guy went to Tennessee and started one, and I just sort of kept track in my mind, all, you know, like I have like a little piece of paper and I keep track, and I pray for people, and they're making disciples and planting unconventional churches. It's really cool. So that was kind of the second year. Like we got it going. We did this. We've continued, and then we continued taking surf trips to El Salvador. So we're taking guys from Grapple Chapel and the coffee shop and going surfing and continuing to visit Sampapo. When the coffee shop opened, we had some worship nights. And at that time, there were a lot of people coming. I'm not sure why. I think it was because we were just coming out of COVID and people hadn't like had a social gathering in a while. And so it just went crazy for like 6 months. There was a lot of younger people coming. And one of those was a professional basketball player from Argentina who was home working in between his next basketball season in Argentina. And I remember the night we had the most people at the coffee shop, the most people I've ever seen for an event we've ever done. And I said to Mitch, you're going to speak tonight. He's like, huh? I go, yeah, you're going to speak tonight. Cause I learned that one of the best ways that I could disciple people and to give them that can-do attitude was to ask them to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Cause nobody ever asks people to teach. They're always like, oh, give me the mic. I'm the man, you know, like, you know, and sometimes that could be really good. And then sometimes it cannot be good. Yeah. But I think one of the downsides of always having the mic is then other people don't get that can-do spirit. Like I can, you know, so what the balance is, geez, I don't know. I'm just kind of sharing I was always trying to give the mic away. And for anybody who's seen my teachings on YouTube, you can see why I try to give the mic away. I'm kind of like not, I'm kind of a very boring speaker. The science has spoken. The data has spoken. But he loved it. He loved it. And I could just tell something clicked. And well, he ended up going back to Argentina and starting several house churches and I told him I'll come visit you. And I did. I went and visited him, and so that's how we ended up doing some church planting in Argentina. And it was at that time I realized, okay, you know, one of the things that's going on here is a lot of younger people aren't, for whatever reason, they liked what we were doing, but also they saw an operating system that they could go do.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, that's just what they saw. I could go do this. And so Mitch went, and Chloe ended up starting a Jesus in the Park. You've met Chloe.
Yeah.
And then Nico.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe and check his blog at ralphmoore.net.